stations have reported increasing Mars quakes. Whether this is a precursor to the same process as we are seeing on Mercury or Venus is unknown at this time. However, Mars personnel have already started evacuation proceedings as a precautionary measure.
Definitely, Ivan. Kemp pointed the remote and started surfing. The news was being repeated on dozens of stations, but they all appeared to be rehashing the same facts. No one was going on the record with any more than the most basic interpretation of events.
"We could check the Internet,"
Narang suggested. Kemp shook his head.
"It's the government. It's the military-industrial complex. It's the liberals. It's aliens."
He grinned at her. They'd actually be correct on that last item. Narang rolled her eyes and headed back to the bathroom.
"It's a good thing you're richer than Midas,"
Narang said to Kemp as the shuttle snuggled up to the Olympus Station docking port.
"The ICDC auditors would be storming my office with torches and pitchforks by now, with all this travel."
Kemp smiled. It occurred to him that even in the short time that he'd been a billionaire, his attitudes toward spending money had changed drastically. The cost of flying up to the station would have once meant skipping his annual vacation. Now, it was cab fare. They climbed out of the taxi and went straight to the docking information board, located beside the elevators. Kemp was an old hand at weightless movement, but Narang showed the noob's tendency to put too much muscle into it. He gave her a few quick pointers, and she corrected immediately. The getting ahead was listed in berth 8. Kemp did a quick calculation, then headed for a taxi station. In a short time, an automated cart stopped in front of them. They pulled themselves in, snapped the lap restraints into place, and the cart pulled out. As they moved along the circumference of the hub, Kemp could see that most people were glued to their phones or tablets. He considered pulling out his phone and surfing, but decided to wait until they were on board the getting ahead. They got off at berth 8 and pulled themselves over to the egress point. Kemp identified himself to the attendant AI, and the door opened. They found Captain Jennings in the on-axis bridge. He nodded to them, then turned back to the monitor he'd been watching.
"Interesting developments continue," he said. "It appears that someone is engaged in some kind of planetary engineering."
The captain played with his controls, and the feed was duplicated onto the main bridge monitor. Jennings turned off the sound and gave them a capsule summary.
"The Venus structures are now spewing atmosphere into space at greater than escape velocity. The volume is truly mind-boggling. The point, according to the talking heads, appears to be to strip Venus of its atmosphere. They estimate it'll be done in a few weeks."
Narang shook her head in disbelief.
"A whole planet's worth of atmosphere? That's amazing."
"Won't all that gas in interplanetary space create problems for ships?"
Kemp asked. Jennings nodded.
"That occurred to a lot of people, so they did some calculations. It appears that each nozzle, or whatever they are, accelerates the gas either into an orbit that intersects the sun, or a long-period orbit that won't re-enter the inner system for centuries. The mechanism seems to be taking care to avoid polluting the local area."
Kemp began to reply,
"I'm not sure if that indicates," when the monitor flashed up breaking news, and the recorded interview cut to one of the news anchors. The captain quickly restored the sound.
"We have confirmation that some unidentified structures are growing at the poles on Mars, similar but not identical to the Mercury artifacts. There are also indications of crustal movements around the equator, although nothing specific has been identified."
The monitor cut to images, obviously taken with a phone from a ship's viewport. They showed structures, large enough to be seen from orbit, pushing their way out of the planet's crust.
"Mercury, Venus, and Mars. Assuming there's a theme to all this, what is he doing?"
Kemp scratched his chin, staring at the screen.
"Perhaps," Captain Jennings replied, "we'll get a chance to ask him. Please strap yourselves in and we can get going."
Within 10 minutes, the getting ahead was outside the Olympus Station's slow zone, and the captain began to apply some real thrust. The course laid in, and the ship's AI in charge, Jennings turned to his two passengers.
What's the plan?
We have to get out there and try to convince the Navy's task force not to attack.
That's it? As plans go, that really lacks a certain something.
Planning? Kemp grinned at him.
Yes, that. Jennings shook his head. Sadly, it's all we have right now.
So those oversized nacelles you had installed on the Getting Ahead? I guess it's time to find out if you got your money's worth.
Mm-hmm. That's why I have the hab ring spun down. Better make yourselves comfortable. This isn't going to be pleasant.
Jennings was as good as his word. The acceleration was heavy enough to make breathing uncomfortable, but smooth, which told Kemp that the ship's engines weren't going flat out. That raised the obvious question of just how much acceleration the Getting Ahead was capable of. Kemp hoped not to have to find out. The current level was quite enough, thanks. After several minutes of hell, Jennings reduced acceleration to what felt like about a half G. He stood and motioned his guests to unbuckle as well.
I've taken on a full load of fuel, including aux tanks. With just the three of us and no cargo, I can keep us under power all the way to the destination. We won't bother with the hab ring at all. That will mean sleeping in one of the on-axis bunk rooms, though.
Jennings looked sheepish for a moment.
The return trip will be more leisurely, of necessity. I hope you packed your toothbrushes and a lot of reading.
76. Defensive Strategy. 20 fusion signatures, all approaching on different vectors, all carefully timed so that they would arrive in an almost spherical formation around the location of the last encounter. Ivan could feel the computer's cool calculations going on in the background. Threat analysis, species evaluations, decision trees, all flying past too quickly for him to follow. Ralph didn't try to explain its ruminations in detail, but it did give him occasional summary images of the analyses and goal weightings. So far, humanity was balanced on a knife edge. Not quite belligerent enough to be worth wiping out, and not quite potentially useful enough to be uploaded. But when the two new balls of nanites were ready, a decision would be made. Although Ivan would have preferred a third option, at least Ralph hadn't settled on Plan A or Plan B yet. For the moment, his family and all of humanity was still safe. And now, following those first signatures, six more, from another vector. Drive flame analysis and acceleration indicated something heavy. Ivan's guess was SSE warships. He'd seen programs on the vid about their military. They built big. No finesse, no concession to economics or efficiency. Simply massive brute force. Well, it was a bonus, of a sort, from a Plan B point of view. The UENN and SSE would be competing to see who could blow up Ivan first. And right about now, Ralph would be realizing that all the nanites had gone to Mercury, Venus, and Mars, and there weren't enough in the two new balls to defend with.
These incoming groups are from different human cohorts, are they not?
Different nations, yes.
I assume their intentions are hostile?
Probably a safe bet.
Given the situation, I find their response disappointing.
A value judgment? You're getting opinions now?
An expression indicating that reality falls short of expectations. Am I phrasing it incorrectly?
No, I guess not. But why would you not expect us to react defensively?
A more rational species would spend more time gathering facts, evaluating options and risks, determining what is within the range of possibility before selecting this strategy.
The worst part was that Ivan couldn't honestly disagree. His attention was drawn to another fusion signature just leaving Olympus Station. The heat signature and spectrum indicated a larger ship than the observed acceleration allowed. He smiled to himself. That would be Captain Jennings's hot rod. He wondered if the getting ahead would make it on time, or if they'd figured out what he was trying to tell them. Come to think of it, the SSE ships could be used to emphasize the point. Good for Plan A. He looked at the two remaining chrome balls, one nacelle from the cruisers floating beside each. Destined for the Earth and the Moon, they represented, one way or the other, the end of humanity. Come on, Captain Jennings, put some hustle on. 77. Surveil. The spy drones sent in their views of the construction as they flew through the enemy's arena. Moore and Mandelbaum stood to the right of Captain Harding, who was closely following the activity of his bridge crew. As quickly as Surveil could clean up and integrate the transmissions, they were transferred to tablets. Most of the images showed the remains of the Mad Astra and of the two cruisers. The two Navy ships had been stripped down to the point of being junk. They were obviously being used only for construction material. The Astra, on the other hand, seemed to still be spaceworthy, but with a much reduced size. The skin had been stripped off, the middle chopped out, and the ends stuck together. A half-completed radio dish floated in the background, dwarfing the cruisers. In zero gravity, it was gossamer thin, its shape maintained by guy wires and spring steel segments. Moore stared up at the overhead, rubbing his chin. The engines of a mining ship were no match for a Navy vessel, but strip most of the weight away and what you were left with was essentially a rocket engine with a steering wheel at the front. Moore was no engineer, but a lifetime working with ships had given him some seat-of-the-pants skills. He closed his eyes, moving his lips silently, then snapped his eyes open.
Commodore?
Mandelbaum looked up from the tablet she was reading.
Yes.
The civilian ship, or what's left of it. It could, in principle, completely outpace any of our vessels. I'm guessing that's his getaway machine.
Mandelbaum frowned at the image on the monitor.
That's a bit of a stretch, I think. He'd have to remove so much ship.
No environmentals. He doesn't need them. No oxygen or water. No food. Toss out living quarters, recycling systems, for that matter. Every bulkhead and airlock designed to retain an atmosphere. It's a stripped-down hot rod.
Mandelbaum stared at the image, her eyes narrowing. Then she nodded and sat back.
Noted. Thank you, Admiral. Captain, be sure to make the Mad Astra a target.
Sir?
An officer turned from her console to face Captain Harding.
Signals indicate an approaching ship, other than the SSE warships, I mean.
Distance?
Just under 0.2 AU, sir, and closing fast. Decelerating at 0.5G. Back prop puts departure at Olympus Station.
Got a transponder ID?
Nothing in onboard archives, which probably means it's pretty new, sir. We've queried Earthside, but it'll be a while for a response.
Mandelbaum cut in.
Any possibility this is coincidence, that they're heading somewhere else?
Coming right down our backsides, ma'am, and decelerating to arrive at the theater with zero relative velocity.
So that's a no, then.
Mandelbaum turned to Moore.
Any ideas?
To be honest, my best guess would be the former captain of the Mad Astra, and possibly some crew. They don't seem to be able to get past this whole Pritchard thing.
Why? What are they going to do, take us on?
Mandelbaum frowned and turned to the signals officer.
Could that thing be armed?
The officer shook her head.
Transponder details jibe with the silhouette. It's a miner. Ben's Gilmore 4502, but apparently with some mods. It's coming in way too hot for a stock 4502.
Mandelbaum frowned and shook her head, plainly perplexed by the behavior of civilians.
Fine. Signals, hail them, demand an explanation, and warn them they're heading for a possible battle zone, and give me an estimated time to reply.
Light speed delay 1:12 each way, ma'am, plus any time required to format a response, of course.
What about the SSE ships?
They're about 22 away, ma'am, coming in more sedately. Mandelbaum looked up at the tactical screen and contemplated the images for a few moments. Graphics of the Navy ships, the approaching civilian ship, and the trailing SSE flotilla competed with vector arrows and velocity annotations. The Commodore ran a finger up and down the bridge of her nose.
We may already be too late. The activity on Mercury, Venus, and Mars is almost certainly Pritchard's doing.
Well, no, Commodore, Moore interjected. It could also be the arts that he mentions. Although I would find the coincidence of them showing up just as the uploads gain a foothold a little hard to swallow.
Either way, Admiral, it's bad for us. Does it change our strategy?
Assuming we take all of Pritchard's statements at face value, then we will fare worse at the hands of the arts.
That's just different degrees of death, Admiral. Neither consequence is acceptable. I think we need to fight the battle that's in front of us, rather than speculating and paralyzing ourselves.
Moore nodded, not responding. He realized that his attitudes had changed since his failure in the previous encounter. Perhaps it was the fact of Pritchard not killing them out of hand. Perhaps it was just a chance to think logically through the various alternatives. Moore still wouldn't call himself a dove by any stretch, but he found himself slightly less attached to the military solution as a first resort. He stared into space, hands clasped behind his back, considering the alternatives. Were there no possible outcomes that spared the human race? Or had he simply not thought of one? Moore remembered Sherlock Holmes's canonical statement that one should eliminate all other alternatives in order to come up with the right answer. The problem, which never seemed to be discussed, was whether you could think of all the alternatives. What if you missed one? What if you simply didn't have the knowledge to posit the right answer? It was a stance filled with an unstated, arrogant belief that one could know all the possible choices. Moore turned to glance speculatively at Commodore Mandelbaum. He wondered if she would be flexible enough to try something different, if it presented itself. 78. Approach.
We've received a communication from the Navy, Captain Jennings announced. Hardly surprising, of course.
He put it up on the bridge monitor.
How shall we respond?
Kemp read the missive.
I think we should just be truthful, Captain. There's no point in trying to outguess and outfinesse. Too many players in this game right now.
They were painfully aware of the very large SSE vessels approaching behind them. Jennings assured his passengers that he could outrun the warships. Missiles, not so much, but one hoped that even the SSE would hesitate before firing on a civilian vessel.
Fine, Dr. Kemp. I will defer to your expertise in this issue. Please compose a response and let me know when it's ready. Meanwhile, I need a coffee.
Jennings stood and headed for the captain's ready room.
Tea,
Narang said, standing up. Kemp stood up as well. There were, after all, priorities. The three sat around the conference table in the ready room. Jennings' eyes tracked as he read the text on his tablet.
From Andrew Jennings, Captain, IMM, getting ahead. CC, Dr. Charles Kemp, ship's doctor, Dr. Madhur Narang, ICDC. To Commander Rani Mandelbaum, UENN Fleet Command.
We are aware of the nature of your mission and have a good general idea of Ivan Pritchard's plans from previous conversations with him. Dr. Narang has relayed the contents of those conversations to the Navy. We are concerned that you are ignoring the proper game theory response and are proceeding with a standard defector move. We don't, of course, know for sure that Pritchard can withstand and or survive an attack by yourselves. However, Everything from his original conversion to current events on several inner system planets indicates quite clearly that we are dealing with a technology far in advance of our own. In our opinion, we cannot win a straight fight. Therefore, the only option is to offer a cooperator move and hope that the computer will relent. We are, as you know, en route. Celestial mechanics being what it is, we are committed to our destination. Doctors Narang and Kemp have a working relationship with Pritchard. We implore you to hold off and give them an opportunity to negotiate a better result. Concerning the trailing SSE warships, we have received no communication from them. They may be taking a wait-and-see attitude, or they may simply be trying to figure out what you're doing out here. Absent some indication of their motives and plans, I can offer no insight or suggestions. A. Jennings, Captain. Jennings nodded and handed the tablet back to Kemp. Looks good. Please do the honors. Kemp pressed send.
Now we wait.
Mars has started growing something that looks like the structures on Venus, Jennings said, looking up from his tablet. Perhaps they mean to blow off Mars's atmosphere as well.
Not sure why, Narang said. There's barely an atmosphere to begin with.
Jennings shrugged. Unsurprisingly, the research stations and test colonies have been evacuated. Who knows if something will start growing underfoot at any moment.
And Mercury?
Well, no atmosphere to worry about, so I don't expect we'll ever see the same structures. What is growing so far is unidentifiable.
A ding on the captain's tablet made them all look up. Jennings swiped at the tablet for a few moments, then his eyes tracked back and forth as he read whatever it was. He looked up at his passengers, and Kemp could see it wasn't good.
The Navy has rejected our proposal. They will attack.
Kemp rubbed his eyes.
Offering the computer a cooperator move was a long shot. Maddie admitted that. I guess that's how the Navy sees it as well.
He looked around at the others.
We're out of options.
The Navy would have done a risk analysis on the suggestion. They have their equations as well, Jennings said.
And the equation is every...
Narang and Jennings turned to look at Kemp, who had chopped his statement mid-sentence and was sitting there, staring straight ahead. Kemp slowly turned his head.
The equation is everything. It has no ego. Ivan said that. He stressed it.
What?
Kemp refocused on Jennings.
We do have options. We've been looking at this wrong. We can force the computer to see things our way.
79. Attack. Commodore Mandelbaum read the second message on her tablet, her eyebrows gradually drawing together. Finally, she looked up at Moore and shook her head, slowly. Without comment, she sent a copy of both to his tablet, then waved a hand, inviting him to read.
From Andrew Jennings, Captain, IMM Getting Ahead. CC Dr. Charles Kemp, Ship's Doctor, Dr. Madhur Narang, ICDC. 2. Commodore Rani Mandelbaum, UENN Fleet Command.
We understand that you may not have considered the cooperator offer to be of a sufficiently high probability to be worth attempting. However, according to Dr. Kemp, we may have some additional leverage, a way to force the computer to accede to our offer. Again, we implore you to hold off and let us try this alternative.
A. Jennings, Captain. Moore read the messages twice, certain the first time that he'd missed something fundamental. He looked up at Mandelbaum.
I don't remember hearing anything in the recording of the interview with Dr. Narang about possible game theory scenarios. What haven't I been told?
Mandelbaum stared at him silently for several seconds, then stood up.
Ready room.
Moore followed her and sat in the indicated chair.
You were given a summary and extracts, Admiral Moore.
The drivel about game theory tactics wasn't considered germane.
Moore felt the blood drain from his face as he realized two things. One, that he was sufficiently out of the loop to be subject to edited versions of the facts, and two, that until very recently he would have approved of the tactic. Getting your ass kicked, however, tended to put a different perspective on your belief in your infallibility. Recriminations wouldn't help, though, especially with someone who could freeze him out, or even throw him in the brig at her discretion.
"May I have access to the complete recording now, Commodore?"
"Fine, Admiral. However, we will not wait for you to bring yourself up to date. The attack will proceed as planned."
She poked at her tablet, and Moore's device dinged as he received a file. Mandelbaum stood.
"Feel free to make use of the room, Admiral. You may return to station when ready."
He turned to watch her as she floated out of the room, then shook his head and followed. Commodore Mandelbaum settled herself in her spot to the right of Captain Harding and nodded. He turned to his staff.
"Tactical. Operation. Status?"
"Nominal, sir. Everything is in place."
"Then execute the plan, Lieutenant."
"Aye."
The tactical officer began running through lists, activating operations and handling confirmations. As the orders percolated through ship's systems, other bridge crew became more animated. Soon the bridge was a bee's nest of activity, all carefully coordinated as station operators worked in concert. Finally, the tactical officer turned in his seat to face the captain.
"All scripts are active, sir. First contact, 2 minutes.
Moore used the 2 minutes to scan the transcript of the interview, since that would be both faster and less distracting to the bridge crew. When he was done, he looked up at Mandelbaum.
"And you didn't even once consider this option?"
Mandelbaum turned and stared coldly at him.
"It was discussed, Admiral, and dismissed. Even Dr. Narang admitted that it was an outside chance."
"As opposed to what you're doing? Never mistake motion for action, Commodore. You've just confirmed to Pritchard's computer that we are not capable of making the intelligent choice. Instead, defaulting to violence."
Mandelbaum raised an eyebrow.
"You seem to have changed, Admiral."
"I've never before been on the wrong side of a battle where I was so completely overmatched that I might as well not have shown up. The problem with military solutions is that they favor the strongest side, not the one with the moral right, or the one with the best plan. And in this case, I don't believe we are the strongest side, not by a wide margin."
"We'll know soon enough, Admiral. The second wave of surveillance drones all made it through the active theater in one piece. Lieutenant, pull the 3 cam vids with the best details and forward them to me."
"Aye."
"Ma'am, we have another incoming message from the Getting Ahead. Put it up."
"From Andrew Jennings, Captain, IMM Getting Ahead. CC Dr. Charles Kemp, ship's doctor, Dr. Madhura Narang, ICDC. To Commodore Rani Mandelbaum, UENN Fleet Command. Commodore, we are close enough to have gotten a good view of the theater, as I believe you military types like to call it. One of the numerous upgrades I had done to the Getting Ahead was a much larger set of optics, so I probably have as good a view as you, and possibly even a better one. We took some images last time we were up here, after the military gave up those 2 cruisers. I note 2 things missing at this time. 1, the former Mad Astra, and 2, a group of chrome-colored balls. The latter are somewhat hard to see unless you know what you're looking for, and given our experience with Pritchard, we do. The point I'm trying to make is that you won't get Pritchard and you won't get his nanites, and it's entirely possible that you won't get his comms station, at least not the real one. You are dealing with a computer system that may have literally millions of years of experience to draw on in terms of tactical decisions, and you are very probably about to have your asses handed to you. A. Jennings, Captain.
"Damn it,"
muttered Mandelbaum.
"Tactical, where are those vids?"
"Coming up, ma'am. Transferring now."
Moore noted that he did not receive a copy, or an offer of a copy. He had a feeling that they were entering FUBAR territory. In not very much longer, the Commodore might be seeing the situation from his angle. That would be unfortunate, because it would mean they'd failed. Mandelbaum stared at her tablet for several minutes, poking and swiping at it at seemingly random intervals. Finally, she looked up.
It would appear that Jennings' evaluation is correct, and how in hell did he get these images before us? Surveil?
Sorry, ma'am. Don't know. However, the message did mention larger optics. Big ship like that, lots of money. He might have room for a 450 Maxudo of Cassegrain. We'd never be able to touch that.
The takeaway, though, is that the bird has flown, Moore said.
Mandelbaum favored him with a murderous glare, and Moore wondered for a moment if he should get himself checked for radiation burns.
Ready room?
Mandelbaum said curtly. Without waiting, she launched herself from her chair. Moore settled himself comfortably and pulled up his workspace to skim the full vids. Mandelbaum pulled a coffee and gestured to him to help himself. When he was seated again, she put her coffee down and said,
"We seem to consistently underestimate this character."
"Because we keep thinking we're dealing with Ivan Pritchard, a down-on-his-luck computer programmer turned miner. He's just along for the ride. It's the computer that comes with the nanites. That's the true antagonist."
Mandelbaum nodded.
"We keep our AIs strictly limited so that humans make all the real decisions. We tend to think that it'll always be that way. Perhaps that's unrealistic."
She pressed the intercom button.
"Signals."
"Ma'am."
"What's the delay on communications with the Getting Ahead?"
20 seconds round trip, ma'am."
Mandelbaum's eyebrows rose, and Moore found himself impressed as well. The civilian ship had closed a significant fraction of the distance since they'd first been detected. Their top speed at turnover must have been astronomical. Mandelbaum looked at him.
"It's not ideal for voice. Let's try text."
Moore nodded, and Mandelbaum pulled her tablet into position. She shared her screen with him, then began typing.
"Concur with your analysis, Captain. Subject is in the wind. No info on chrome balls. Can you give details?"
Mandelbaum hit send, then cradled her coffee. The answer came back in 2 minutes.
"Balls likely contained nanite payloads for specific targets. See news. Merc, Venus, Mars. 5 balls when we were here. 3 likely accounted for. Last 2, Earth, Moon."
"Shit!" Moore jumped at the expletive, and Mandelbaum gave him an apologetic look. She leaned over her tablet and typed out a response.
"Conversion of Earth, Moon, imminent, ungood. Do you have a suggestion to rescue the situation?"
This time over 3 minutes passed before a response came in.
"Find Ivan. Second comm station, nanite packages. Start now. Talk later."
Mandelbaum frowned.
"Wait. They were all about the peaceful talking. Now they want us to find and destroy them?"
"Find. Commodore, no mention of destroy."
Moore tapped the screen to emphasize the point.
"Fine," Mandelbaum sent. "Stand by."
Then hit the intercom.
"Surveil. Assume 2 bogies are headed from here to Earth and Luna. Calculate trajectories. Send up to 1/3 of our drones to look for them. Then send the balance out all directions looking for other artifacts."
The tablet dinged, and Mandelbaum looked down.
"Include nukes. Cruise missiles."
"I'm getting whiplash from trying to follow the logic of these people."
She typed a message.
"You'll explain this?"
The response came back immediately, allowing for light-speed delay.
"Less talk, more search."
Mandelbaum gave Moore a rueful grin.
"Well, that at least is clear."
She hit the button.
"Tactical, send cruise missiles on the trail of the drones. I want a wide enough spread to be able to hit anything we find. In any direction. Clear?"
"Aye."
"Signals, send a message to base. Tell them to get every optical and radio telescope out and looking for anything at all. We need the bogeys spotted. ASAP."
"Aye."
Mandelbaum sat back.
"Now, we wait."
80. Response. Ivan drifted through interplanetary space, literally sitting on the end of a fusion drive nacelle. He had stripped the nacelles from the cruisers, attached some fuel pods to each, a set of thrusters around the front, and he had a spaceship. As long as you didn't need to breathe, of course. It was the minimalist's vessel, thrust, steering, and fuel. All you really needed to get from A to B. A similar setup provided the transportation for two balls of chrome, nanite assault troops, heading for their targets. Ivan wished he could cry. Unless Kemp and the crew pulled a rabbit out of a hat, his family would be dead within a couple of weeks. And everyone else on Earth. And all other life. But he found that last bit somehow less important. Ralph had made a decision based on the approaching attackers, UENN and SSE alike. It had been close. Oh, so close, but humanity just didn't quite make the cut. Instead, the system would be cleared and turned into an automated outpost in the war against the arts. Plan B. The two remaining nanite balls were being programmed to do to Earth and Luna what had already been done to Mercury, Venus, and Mars.
You'll kill us all off? Just like that?
It is not intentional. Simply a side effect. Modifying the system for defense will render the planets uninhabitable.
That's not reassuring.
Reassurance is not in my gall tree. I recognize your objections. However, my prime directives necessitate maximizing value for the Makers, not for your people.
But billions of sentient beings. Billions, for God's sake.
The concept of gods is not unknown to the Makers. A large fraction of them had theistic beliefs at some point in their biological history. I have the historical details, but do not pretend to understand the concepts or motivations. The fate of humanity is unfortunate. An uploaded species would be of far more value, but yours is not suitable at this time. Far too violent, short-sighted, and fractious.
We might still get there.
Not before you die of heat death or at the hands of your own AIs. Your technological progress has outstripped your maturation to a quite unusual extent.
So that was it. Ralph was adamant about its course of action. Argument wouldn't sidetrack it. There was only the one small hope that he could engineer a do-over, and that all his double-agenty planning hadn't missed something. Ivan looked to the heavens, all around him, and found himself praying to a god he'd stopped believing in long ago to please, please help the crew of the Getting Ahead.
81. Found.
Ma'am, we have a bogey.
Both Mandelbaum and Moore looked up at the intercom message from Captain Harding.
Location and ID?
Mandelbaum asked.
It looks a lot like the first communications station we found, but significantly bigger. Huge radio dish and so on, half an AU higher up, out of the ecliptic.
Moore pursed his lips for a moment.
It's reasonable to assume that the one we were about to nuke is a decoy.
Mandelbaum typed a message.
Found second station. Recommendation?
The Getting Ahead was almost close enough for conversations, but Mandelbaum had said that she liked to think about what to say, so she would continue with texts as long as possible. Moore didn't care either way. Results were what mattered.
Set up, but don't attack. We want a credible threat. Also, set up to defend against the SSE ships.
What? They're going for detente?
Mandelbaum's eyes bugged out.
That's ridiculous.
She turned to Moore.
They can't possibly think that'll hold water.
Moore shook his head.
We'd lose a standoff, unless we could prevent Pritchard from transmitting, and all he'd have to do is make some more nanites and sneak them in. I don't think that's what Jennings and crew have in mind. Have you found Pritchard?
Mandelbaum shook her head, not so much in answer to the text as in evident frustration.
Not yet.
Moore looked at her.
It may be a negotiating tactic.
At her raised eyebrows, he continued.
Dr. Narang mentioned game theory in the interview. They may be still trying for something along those lines, although since it's the computer's turn to move, I don't see what we can do.
Mandelbaum tossed her tablet onto the desk and sat back.
Unfortunately, the nanite balls and the station were easy to find, because the number of paths Pritchard could take was constrained by the requirements of orbital mechanics. He himself has no goal other than to stay hidden. He could be anywhere.
Moore and Mandelbaum both jumped as the intercom crackled to life.
Ma'am, the getting ahead is pulling up to our position.
Thank you, Captain Harding. Please have signals contact the getting ahead. Route the connection to the ready room.
Aye.
In less than a minute, Captain Jennings' voice played from the speaker.
Good day, Commodore.
Captain, are Kemp and Narang available?
We're all here, Commodore,
said Kemp.
Good. Can you explain now what we're attempting?
We're trying for Plan C.
There was a pause.
The computer had to decide whether to upload us or just convert the solar system into a remote post of sorts. That would be fatal to all life on Earth, of course. We are trying for a third alternative, a compromise that leaves Earth habitable.
Did Pritchard mention such an alternative?
He hinted at it,
said Narang.
He can't just talk straight about ways to finesse the computer. It's listening all the time, of course. But the colloquial nature of human communication, and especially English, which is a truly chaotic language, makes it possible to say a lot without actually saying it. Just ask Shakespeare or any half-decent poet.
So, he was trying to tell you...
Moore leaned forward. His interest piqued.
That we might be able to steer a middle ground between writing us off and assimilating us. I think he's also been doing things in the least efficient way he can get away with to give us more time. But he's walking a tightrope as well. His knowledge is handy for dealing with the solar system, but if the computer decides he's a liability, he could just be switched off.
This is essentially what you were talking about during the interview. It sounded like a long shot then, and it sounds like it now,
Mandelbaum said.
But the only shot we have at the moment, and maybe not as much of a stretch as we thought. We have additional information on Ivan's end game.
And that is?
It's too complicated to go into in detail right now,
Kemp replied.
But the short answer is that we believe we can present a scenario whereby the computer will have no choice but to negotiate.
I will provisionally accept that for the moment.
Mandelbaum grabbed her tablet.
What's the next step?
We have to find Ivan. We can't do anything until we can talk to him.
Moore shook his head in frustration.
He could be anywhere. There's simply no reason to prefer one direction over another. And we don't have the resources to search the entire surrounding sphere. He has almost literally the entire universe to lose himself in.
There was a short silence before Kemp replied.
Well, that's the thing, Admiral. If Ivan is doing what we think, trying to give humanity an out, then he will not have tried too hard to lose himself. He'll be available for communications.
Wait,
Mandelbaum frowned.
Are you saying it's as easy as broadcasting a message?
Kemp chuckled, audible over the intercom.
One good way to find out.
Unbelievable.
Mandelbaum did a slow facepalm, then played with the intercom panel.
Signals, give me a general broadcast channel, full power, omnidirectional, keep it open until I say otherwise.
Aye, ma'am. Channel 7 ready.
Mandelbaum gazed at Moore silently for a few moments, then leaned on the chair arm closest to the intercom speaker.
I guess we should prepare a statement.
I've been working on that, Commodore, Kemp replied. First, let's see if he's listening.
Mandelbaum nodded, then activated Channel 7.
Attention, Ivan Pritchard. If you are listening, this is Commodore Mandelbaum of the United Earth Nations Navy. I have myself, Admiral Moore, Captain Jennings, Dr. Kemp, and Dr. Narang on the line. We wish to discuss the current situation with you.
Mandelbaum released the transmit button and cocked her head at Moore.
That's about all we can...
Cutting her off in mid-sentence, Ivan Pritchard's voice played from the intercom.
Hi, Commodore. How's Trix?
82. Discussion. Kemp's eyebrows rose.
That was fast.
Virtually no delay. He's in the neighborhood. It seems you were right. He's deliberately set things up to allow this meeting.
Kemp leaned forward and spoke directly to the intercom.
Commodore, it's very important that you not take any threatening actions.
Not to worry, Doctor.
Mandelbaum's voice came back immediately.
Signals informs me that Pritchard's responses are coming from an indefinite number of repeaters, completely englobing us. Even if we wanted to, we don't have enough nukes to take them all out. And they could all be repeaters. He could be even farther out, relaying his responses.
Very well planned, it seems,
Jennings said.
Ivan? Dr. Kemp said.
Here, Doc.
We have an interesting situation. We've tagged your comms station, the real one, and your nanite balls. We can blow them up, but we can't blow you up. You can build more nanites and try again, but we'll be more prepared to deny you resources. And we're learning how to fight the nanites. We also have the poisoning the well option. Remember you mentioned that systems belonging to species that nuke themselves to extinction are unusable? We have enough hardware to implement that. And you know we'd be willing. Sounds like the beginning of a long, drawn-out Cold War, with both sides offering nothing but defector moves. Do you agree with my assessment?
Sure do, Doc. And the computer is annoyed with me. It's pretty sure I orchestrated this, but it can't figure out how.
I'd imagine the subtleties of implied communication are something you lose when you get uploaded,
Narang commented.
Not sure I'd agree, Doc. Dr. Narang. I'm uploaded, and I still get it.
So it's not the process itself, Dr. Kemp mused out loud. Time? Or maybe loss of humanity, or the equivalent for other species?
I can't say, Doc. Neither can the computer. But it admits, not sure if that's the right word, maybe... acknowledges that this is one of the reasons that the uploads keep looking for more species. Fresh blood, so to speak.
And yet it was planning on wiping us out.
Not explicitly, just allowing us to be killed in the conversion. Nothing personal. There's a cost-benefit analysis and a risk analysis. Humanity came up short, although barely. We are apparently a bit of a pain in the ass, cosmically speaking.
Now came the gambit. Kemp had to hope he played this right. He took a deep breath.
Given all that, the computer's course of action doesn't strike me as logical.
There was a momentary silence, then Ivan laughed out loud.
I wouldn't have believed it was possible, but you just offended the computer, Doc.
Kemp grinned at Jennings and Narang, then answered, Well, good. At least that means it's listening. He settled back in his chair and stroked his chin for a moment.
Here's the thing. We're not facing an imminent arts invasion, are we? I mean, nothing specific has been detected.
Why do you say that, Doctor?
Mandelbaum cut in.
Because the computer's actions are orderly and are not rushed. A space station, for instance, would be a secondary priority if the arts were coming down our throats. Instead... the computer is executing multiple parallel activities. What you do when you have the luxury of time.
As it happens, Doc, you're correct. How is that relevant?
Ivan's voice had taken on a flat inflection. Dr. Kemp frowned for a moment, wondering if he'd just heard the computer talking.
Because, Ivan, it changes the risk analysis. You've said that species are valuable as uploads. If you aren't
being imminently forced into a course of action, then it is logical to cultivate the possibility—
Hold on, Doctor,
Mandelbaum interjected.
You're advocating for upload?
In the future, Commodore. And possibly willingly by our own hand. That is how a percentage of species come up, right, Ivan?
That is correct. Most uploaded species, in fact, are self-actualized.
Dr. Kemp looked at Narang, whose brow was furrowed. Ivan's voice was definitely changing in tone, timbre, inflection, pacing. The cadence of the words had become more even, like a metronome was in charge. Someone or something else had either taken over or was heavily involved. From one point of view, that was good. From another, they needed Ivan's influence in this discussion. If he'd been subsumed, they might have no chance at all. So why not wait until your hand is forced? Let us continue to develop and grow. You always have the option of going back to Plan A.
Because, on balance, the human race does not display sufficient maturity. Your value to the uploads is questionable at this time.
The voice now had no trace left of Ivan. Kemp stopped to take a deep breath. This was the part where he bet the wad. Assuming your analysis is correct and complete, are you familiar with the prisoner's dilemma? There was a short silence, then Ivan came back on. It was Ivan, Ivan's voice.
Different name, of course, but the computer is familiar with the game theory concept, cooperation versus defection, in a Nash equilibrium situation.
Kemp smiled. Good. I submit that the ability to choose cooperation is based on the willingness to choose longer-term benefits at the expense of shorter-term advantages. In our first encounter, we chose defection and attacked. This time around, we propose to cooperate. There was a...
What?
From Mandelbaum.
Proceed.
Kemp took a deep breath. We can continue the Cold War, each trying to seek short-term advantage and ultimately both of us suffering, or we can seek cooperation, resulting in a short-term minor disadvantage but a longer-term payoff for both. I propose that we will choose not to blow up your nanites and comms station, and in return, you will spare the human race. It's probably too late for the other planets, I'd guess.
What's to stop you from defecting at a later date?
Nothing. Nor is there anything stopping you from waking up one morning and deciding to drop a new set of nanites on Earth. That's the whole point of the prisoner's dilemma. Zero control over the opponent's motivations, thoughts, or plans. You have to depend on the cooperation being sufficiently beneficial to both sides to reduce the temptation to defect. Done properly, it's a positive-sum game. We benefit more in the aggregate than we each would individually.
It seems to me that I will be making most of the concessions.
And getting most of the benefits from a successful relationship in the long term. We get nothing in return but our lives, which we had before you showed up.
True. But why should I choose this path when the payoff is certain with my current plan?
Because if there's one thing that the prisoner's dilemma teaches, it's that over the long term, both parties benefit more by cooperation than by defection. Your purpose, as I understand it, is to provide maximum tactical value for your makers. If you choose the defector route, you are betraying your programming by seeking a shorter-term but suboptimal payoff. And we've just offered a cooperator move. Tit-for-tat strategy mandates that you reciprocate in order to realize that maximal value. There was a pause.
The human phrase for your line of argument is heavy-handed, but not necessarily incorrect. Stand by.
Stand by? Kemp looked at Narang and Jennings. It would appear you've given it something to think about anyway, Jennings said. The radio came back to life.
Your terms are acceptable.
Kemp let out an explosive breath that he didn't realize he'd been holding. Narang whooped. Jennings pressed the button on his console to speak, but Mandelbaum beat him to it.
How do we proceed?
Ivan's voice came on, full-on Ivan.
The computer will signal the makers. That's still the long-term goal. That isn't necessarily a danger to the human race, anyway. Closer to home, it will reprogram the nanite balls for something less dramatic. But part of the deal is that the nanites have to be in place. That's the computer's guarantee that you won't defect on its ass without warning. In return, the computer will provide assistance to help you prevent, or at least delay, the ecological collapse that Earth is facing until you can reduce the threat of the singularity and get upload technology developed and society ready to accept it.
Wow.
Mandelbaum's voice sounded tired.
I hope the UEN ratifies this, or I'm going to be in this shit even deeper than Admiral Moore.
I don't think they'll have any choice, Commodore. The alternative is unacceptable.
Someone, probably bridge crew, cut into the conversation.
Ma'am, we have a hail from the SSE battle group.
Jennings looked at the doctors. Just one pile of fertilizer after another. 83. Reaction.
You engineered that.
Sorry, Ralph. Guilty as charged.
I have reviewed all your conversations, all your actions. I am unable to pinpoint any specific event that would have led to this result. Maker's research has concluded that telepathy is not possible. Were they wrong?
You have enough information to understand our games of chess and Go?
Of course. A simple set of rules, but a complex and unpredictable set of outcomes.
Not unpredictable. Predicting your opponent's strategy is the whole point of the game.
Interesting.
But now the SSE is doing their usual chest beating. We have to help...
No.
Why not? They could screw everything.
Our agreement with humanity deals with the singularity and environmental destruction. At least in theory. This is the third major filter. Self-destruction. If the humans can't overcome this encounter, it is almost certain to progress into full-blown war. Then we are back to square one. An odd term. Game-related?
I think so. So after all that, we just sit back and watch?
It is the final test. If they pass this, you are golden? Another game term?
Don't think so. Not this time.
84. Face-off. Mandelbaum gave Moore a dark look, then pressed the intercom.
Put the SSE vessel through to the ready room, signals.
She waited for the indicator to show a connection and spoke as soon as the light came on.
This is Commodore Mandelbaum commanding the UENN forces.
This is Admiral Yeltsin of the SSE War Fleet, aboard the SSE and destroyer Victorious. Commodore, am I to understand that you intend to do a deal with these entities?
Moore raised his eyebrows. The tone was belligerent. There was a standard joke that the SSE military operated in two modes, confrontational and asleep. But the communication was phrased as a question. For an SSE officer to open with that was unusual. Mandelbaum responded.
Admiral Yeltsin, obviously you've been listening to the conversation, and no surprise since the whole thing was in clear. Hopefully you've heard the whole conversation.
I have. There are two items to note. One, you are unable to destroy the threat, and two, you've decided to try to negotiate your safety. Typical. It falls to myself and the SSE to do the job then. Step aside, and we will take care of it for you.
Moore typed on his tablet, then showed it to Mandelbaum.
Have a getting ahead. Move out of the arena.